Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Did not introduce yourself just then.
I know. I was like, wait, what am I saying?
What show is this?
Yeah, where am I?
It's Monday, guys. So it's Monday for us. We record on Mondays. Although that's the most frazzlest day, I feel like,
yeah,
to record.
Why do we do this to ourselves?
I don't know. Well, we used to record on Thursdays. Maybe we'll just get back to that groove. But, well, the case I have for you tonight is, it's about a couple that went missing back in 2005. They went out and vanished into thin air. This is truly a mystery. Just baffling to me. So, let's get into it. You may have heard of this case before. It was very highly publicized back in 2005, and over the years there have been, I don't even want to say developments, I would just say it's come up again a couple of times over the years. So without further ado, so this story is about the disappearance of Richard Petrone and Danielle Imbo. Richard Petrone was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and he was a single father to a daughter named Angela, who he shared with an ex-girlfriend. He absolutely adored his daughter, like I'm sure every father does, but there was a while where Angela actually lived with him full-time because her mom just worked a lot, had kind of like a busy work schedule, so it just made more sense for her to live with Richard at that time. And that arrangement didn't seem to be like a messy situation. It seemed really amicable with his ex as far as the custody arrangement at that time. But Richard was a very hands-on dad. He would do school runs, take her, drop her off, pick her up. He would take her to the park. He would take her to see friends. You know, he just basically like put his whole life on hold and was just a doting dad. Angela said her dad didn't really date until he met Danielle, which was the first woman he could really be serious about. So Richard had a lot of quality time with Angela, and she realized at a very young age just how special that was, that he was raising her basically on his own. Now, later on, when Angela got a little older, she ended up moving in with her mom. I think it was just her mom's work schedule kind of changed a little bit. Angela was at the point where she could, you know, stay home alone a little bit longer. And she was coming of age, so a girl needs her mother. And again, that arrangement seemed amicable at the time. So it's just kind of the way things worked out.
Gotcha.
Richard helped his dad run a bakery. It was called Viking Pastries, and it was located in Ardmore, Pennsylvania. It's the sort of place that it looks like I would probably go out of my way to get breakfast on the way to work, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they just had the most beautiful cinnamon rolls and all sorts of pastries and deliciousness. And he actually lived above the bakery in an apartment, and that's why he was able to keep Angela like he did, because she was close and she would help him in the bakery, and he would like bring her down and she'd help him bake stuff. And
how fun.
Just really cute. I know. Isn't that so cute?
Yes.
Like, you live above a bakery with your dad and you get to bake stuff. That just sounds like the coolest little thing.
Yeah.
Richard was also super close with his family, mm-hmm. his mother in particular. His mother in a couple of interviews said that she was your typical Italian overbearing mother who was always in his business. So they spoke, you know, on the phone multiple times a day, exchanged texts, and she kind of always knew what he was getting up to. So now let's talk about Danielle. Danielle Autobre, I hope I'm saying that, Autobre, hope I'm saying that correctly. Mm-hmm. She was from Pennsylvania. Autobre is her maiden name, by the way. She and Richard actually knew each other since she was 15 years old because her best friend was his sister, Christine.
Oh, okay.
She was very close to her family as well, especially her brother, John. After their father died years before her disappearance, he sort of moved into this, like, really protective role, like, kind of a, he kind of took over as the father, basically, and just felt really protective over her. Now, their father, John Autobre Sr., he had been somewhat of a local celebrity in town because he was a singer in the 50s.
Cool.
And so, yeah, he did performing all over the city, and Danielle wanted to follow in his footsteps. She was a beautiful singer. She was in a cover band on weekends and loved performing, which I think is so cool.
Yeah.
That was until she met a handsome guy named Joe Imbo at a car dealership she worked at. Now, they fell in love. They married in 2002, and very early on, he wanted her to quit singing. Mm. He's like, you're married now, you know, we're a family, I want to spend the weekends together, you're always off, you know, playing shows and things, and I just need you to settle down. Danielle did so. She quit singing altogether, and that was that. They had a son, Joe Jr., and her family said she was an absolute brilliant mother. They said that when she was at the hospital and she had her baby, she said, I finally know what real love is like, which is telling because she was married.
Right.
And she wasn't too happy in her marriage, but she adored her son. She was so happy to be a mom, except her marriage was really crumbling. Her brother said that one time Danielle was sick and little Joe was also sick, and her husband left to go to the Super Bowl.
Oh, okay.
He just, yeah. That's not the worst part.
No.
The worst part is that he came home and said, I met someone on the flight.
What?
So I'm moving to Georgia.
Just within a flash, like.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
He just came home and he was like, you're probably still mad that I left you homesick by yourself with a sick baby, but I hate to tell you that I met a woman on the plane and I'm moving to Georgia to be with her. So, he did move to Georgia to be with her, but you can imagine that was fleeting.
Right.
It didn't work out. So he came crawling back to Danielle.
Oh, no.
And I don't know if this particular event was what caused them to separate. I mean, it would be for me, but I think they had lots of strife in their marriage to begin with. Like, you have to think the type of person that would ask someone to quit their dream and to quit doing something that makes them so happy without any, like, compromise. Like, okay, why don't you do it every other weekend?
Right.
Why don't you play music every month or something like that? No, it was just he asked her to quit altogether.
No.
I feel like someone like that is probably not the person for you.
Right.
I just think.
Someone who loves you would want you to do something that makes you happy.
Right. And I think it was more about control, and that he didn't like it, so she needed to, like, stop doing it. So it just seems like he probably had a whole lot of other stuff that he did that just was not for her.
Mm-hmm.
So they separated and eventually filed for divorce. in 2004. And Danielle really leaned on her best friend, Christine. They met a lot during that time. Christine was also going through a divorce at that time. Mm. Danielle was really unhappy in her marriage, yes, but she was also struggling with the decision to divorce, which that seems like a silly thing to say, but her friend Christine said that she was troubled about whether or not she was doing the right thing because they had a young son and she was breaking up her family and was that the right thing to do?
Yeah,
of course. I mean, you know, when kids are involved, you kind of go, okay, well, yeah, I'm unhappy, but can we somehow make this work?
Mm-hmm.
So she really was troubled about that. And Joe was not exactly letting her go so easily, so that complicated things. He was still arguing with her every time they saw each other to exchange their son. He was begging to get back together.
Mm.
By this point, Daniel had moved to Mount Laurel, New Jersey, which you think Philadelphia and New Jersey, they were really, at this point, I think 28 miles apart. So it really wasn't that far.
Gotcha.
And she was using her maiden name again. She had lost a bunch of weight. Her brother said at one point she was down to 85 pounds.
Wow, that's so tiny.
Yeah, she began smoking cigarettes. Like, she was smoking before, but she began smoking like a pack a day.
Oh, gosh.
She just was not in a good place. She just was not coping well. One day, her and Christine were together, and Christine's brother, Richard, stopped by. And they were like, oh, hey, I remember you. And as I said before, Danielle and Richard had known each other for many, many years, but they hadn't seen each other for a while. So when they saw each other again, it seemed like they were both really interested in catching up. Like, they were adults. They each had a child now. They weren't in a relationship. So there was just something between them. And they began talking and eventually seeing more and more of each other. And it kind of moved a little bit fast. I think their families were really rooting for them because the families knew each other and they thought they were a good match. But Danielle was not divorced yet. I mean, she was still going through her divorce. And you know who wasn't rooting for them? Her ex-husband or her husband at the time. He was understandably hurt that she was moving on.
Well, he moved on earlier.
There was a new guy. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, he doesn't really have a leg to stand on,
don't make a right.
I don't think. Right. But he was trying to get her back. I mean, he was, like, trying to get her to stay with him, and it wasn't working. And so, yeah, he was pretty scorned. So this was not the sort of drama that Danielle needed in her life. She was trying to get her life back together. So she told Richard she needed some space. She needed some breathing room to think. And Richard gave it to her. He took a step back. He really cared for her and he knew how difficult her divorce was. And so he just gave her space. So that space lasted about 5 weeks.
Aww.
Valentine's Day rolled by without even so much as a text message. And then days later, Richard did reach out. But neither of them could have ever known that that spur-of-the-moment meetup would be the beginning of one of the biggest mysteries in true crime history. So on February 19th, 2005, Danielle was with Christine. They were having dinner in Philadelphia. And Danielle had been texting with Richard. He found out that Christine and Daniel were together because he talked to his sister, and he just shot his shot. I mean, he texted Danielle and said, "Want to go grab a drink?" So they were texting the whole meal, and once her and Christine were done with dinner, Christine dropped Danielle off at the tap room where Richard was having a drink by himself. And so she was joining him there for a drink. I think this was a really casual meetup, but of course it had like flirty undertones, you know, like in this place of we care about each other and we want to be together, but let's not jump into it. Let's just casually grab a drink.
Okay.
So Christine said she had been in touch with the pair hours later. So she had returned back to New Jersey where she lived. She lived near Danielle. And they were trying to get her to come back out and meet up with them. And she was like, dude, I'm already like back over here in Jersey. I'm not coming all the way back over there. Y'all have fun. So Danielle and Richard had a drink at the tap room, but they weren't ready to call it a night yet. Richard's friend Anthony and his wife were over at a bar called Abilene's, and they decided to go meet up with them. So they drove over to Abilene's. They hung out at the club, they listened to music, had some drinks, danced, chatted, I guess as much as you could chat in that kind of environment.
Yeah.
But they had a really good time. The friends they were with wanted to head to another bar after that, but Richard and Danielle were like, you know, we should probably call it a night. Danielle's ex-husband had their son that weekend and would be returning him the next day. And Richard had to drive her back to New Jersey. So he's like, you know what? I'll take you home. And so they told their friends goodbye and they left about 11:30 p.m.
No.
And they disappeared.
Nowhere to be found.
Like, disappeared. Reports said that it was unseasonably cold that night, which... I've never been to Philadelphia in February, but I can imagine it's cold in February anyways. But if it was colder than normal, I would not be going out. I'd be at home in my pajamas with my blanket by the fireplace. But
that's a normal thing. It must have been freezing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's cold all the time there.
I know. I am not cold boned, I guess you could say. So when they left the bar, the assumption is that they went straight to the truck because it was so cold. So Richard was actually totally stoked when he got to the club. He had gotten a parking spot like right there.
Oh, nice.
And so when he got in, he was like, dude, he's told his friend, he's like, I totally scored the best parking spot. So they knew he had parked really close to the front. And you're talking about a city area, bustling, parking at meters. You know how it is. Like, we used to go out in Fort Worth. And you're driving around for 20 minutes looking for a parking spot before you even can get in the place you want to. So we do know that... they parked really close. So where the heck did they go? Like, what happened? So early the next morning, Danielle had an appointment to get her hair done with Christine, but she never showed up. Now, I saw conflicting reports about this, even from the family's interviews about some of the details of the timeline at this point. But Danielle's brother stopped by her house to fix some blinds that her son had pulled off. And when he arrived and knocked on the door, she didn't answer. And he was like, oh, she has that hair appointment. So he just let himself in with a spare key.
Gotcha.
Around the same time, Christine reached out to Danielle's mom and said, Danielle's phone is going straight to voicemail. Have you heard from her? She was supposed to be at this hair appointment. And that's when Danielle's mom got a hold of Danielle's brother, who was at her house or her apartment. I'm not sure in which order all this stuff happened, but it kind of, I guess, simultaneously happened.
Gotcha.
But Danielle wasn't home. The place was still, and it not just looked like nobody was home, but it looked like no one had been home for some time. Everything was in its place. Nothing seemed recently disturbed. Initially, her brother wasn't really concerned because he just thought, well, she's with Richard and maybe she stayed over at his place and her phone died, or, you know. I think we never jump to the worst case scenario, right? But when Joe Imbo came to Daniel's apartment to drop off their son that afternoon, and she was still not home, the family knew something was very wrong. Right. She wouldn't leave her son, and she would get in touch with someone if she was, like, going to be late or not make it at all. And interestingly, when Joe arrived at her apartment, her brother and mother were there by this point. And Joe was like, "Where's Danielle?" And they were like, "Oh, she just asked us to be here to watch little Joe until she got home." And he was like, "Okay." And then he left. I think they didn't want him to know right away that they couldn't find her, just in case he said something or did something, you know? I think they just wanted to kind of keep things under wraps at first because they weren't on good terms.
So was his response suspicious?
No, it wasn't. It was just like, "Oh, okay." And he left. Now, Richard and Daniel's families wasted no time hitting the streets to search for their missing loved ones. Danielle's brother and their father drove around for hours that night.
I could not imagine.
They drove multiple routes to and from the bar to Danielle's apartment, from Danielle's apartment to Richard's apartment, from the bar to Richard's apartment, you know, just every possible route they could think of. They went up and down the streets really slow. It was nighttime, so they're looking at every black truck they can find, major highways, bridges, just any place they could think of. There were multiple bridges, actually, that you could take from Philadelphia to New Jersey, where she lived. And they focused on the Walt Whitman, Ben Franklin, and Betsy Ross bridges. And actually, the Ben Franklin Bridge was the most sensible and direct route for him to have taken to take her back home. But, you know, they haven't seen each other in a while. Maybe he took the long way home.
Just
kind of
cruising
around. Right. So they checked everywhere. John said in an interview that they drove around for something like 13 hours all through the night.
Wow.
They found nothing. Nothing. So when the sun started peeking up, they decided to go home, regroup, maybe try and get some rest. And be with the rest of the family. And by then, friends were gathering together with the family. Richard and Danielle were missing, yes. But you know what else was missing? Richard's truck.
Right.
His 2001 black Dodge Dakota. We're not talking a golf cart here.
Right.
We're talking a big black truck. It wasn't at the bar where he parked, which we don't really know where he parked, but we assume it was one of the closest spots, but it was never found at the bar. So, where was it?
Yeah.
Wasn't at his apartment? Wasn't at Danielle's apartment? Where was it?
Yeah.
So, search parties formed. They fanned out all over the city. At this point, friends were involved. They had flyers in hand that had photos of Richard and Danielle and Richard's truck with his license plate on there, descriptions of the truck, like it had a very specific NASCAR sticker on it. Danielle's brother was able to get in a helicopter with a police officer, and they went up and down the route that they presumed he would have taken to take her home, and up and down the Delaware River. You know, just all along the bay.
Yeah.
Nothing. They found nothing. No, like, just not even a ripple in the water. Police checked into their finances. There was no activity on their cards since the bar. They checked into their personal lives. Was there anything shady that they were involved in? None of that. They were just normal people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can hide. Can hide a lot from your family and friends, but when police get involved and they start picking apart your emails and your, you know, movements and talking to people,
there's something to be found out.
Things can Right. Something can come up pretty quick, but the fact that they didn't find any of that was just crazy.
Yeah.
So they wanted to talk to Richard's friend Anthony. After all, he and his wife were the last people to see Richard and Danielle that night. He did take a polygraph test, and he passed. He told them there was nothing out of the ordinary with Richard and Danielle's, like, demeanor. They were talking about normal things. They were acting normal. They seemed really happy to be together. They weren't, like, fighting or anything. And, of course, he talked about Richard's parking spot that he got because Richard was so stoked about it. So Anthony couldn't really give them much other than kind of nail down a starting place for a timeline. And that was that 11:30 p.m. time that they left. And like I said, he did take a polygraph test and passed, and he was questioned multiple times. I mean, they questioned him throughout the months after the disappearance because, you know, sometimes people can remember things that they didn't remember before when there's been some time that's passed. Nothing. They just pretty quickly moved on from him and started exploring other avenues. They looked into Danielle's ex-husband, Joe, which was my first thought.
Well, that's...
But he had an alibi.
Okay, that was my next question was, what's his alibi?
He was at a family gathering. It was a kid's birthday party that night. Don't know too many details, but it was a kid's birthday party. I don't know many kids' birthday parties that happen really late at night, but apparently it was 50 miles away. He was 50 miles away from where she went missing, and a lot of people vouched for him, not just people. There were multiple police officers that were there at that party, so seems like a legit alibi. They gave Joe a polygraph, the results of which the FBI has not made public. They have been really tight-lipped about that. I know. He's never been cleared. Let me just put it that way. I can't find the results of the polygraph, and I don't know why they would be keeping that so secret as far as pass or fail. Like, I just feel like, you know what I mean?
You don't have to give details. Just let us know if it's pass or fail.
Tell us what we need to know. And in a case where there's so little information, I feel like tell us something.
Right.
So, with no evidence to prove Joe had anything to do with it, I mean, even if he did fail his polygraph, they still didn't have anything to go on. So, they decided to move in another direction. There had been a ton of robberies and auto theft in that area, so they explored underground chop shops, where, you know, stolen cars are stripped and sold for parts and VIN numbers are, you know, removed and,
well, and that's,
all kinds of
that's
stuff.
That's one of my first thoughts is, was somebody laying in the back of the truck, you know, laying and waiting for them to come out. And when they took off, maybe they took their chance to burglarize them and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good theory. They didn't find anything when they, you know, went to the seedy underground, you know, place where people strip and sell parts. And they didn't find any sort of evidence to even believe that there had been any crime committed as far as Richard and Danielle were concerned. They did have divers search the freezing cold Delaware River. And while they did find some cars down there, because there were some cars down there, none of them were Richard's. They found no bodies, no trace of the pair, no belongings, no hair, no fibers, nothing.
Nothing.
They didn't know much at this point, but the families and law enforcement, for that matter, could all agree on one thing, and that was that they did not leave voluntarily. The couple each had a child that they would have never just abandoned, and they were very much connected with their families. I mean, they were very close with their families. They didn't go long without talking to their families. Mm-hmm. But the families and FBI agent Vito Roselli remained hopeful that they would learn what happened to them in those early days, in those early weeks, in the early months. Roselli said he doesn't just think someone knows what happened to them. He thinks people know. People. Okay. Like, plural. And I totally agree. It seems really unlikely that one person could pull something like that off. It's one thing to steal someone's car. Say someone was laying in the back and they had a gun.
Right.
And they were like, just keep driving.
Yeah.
What do they do with the bodies? What do you do with the truck? Right. Like, it seems crazy to think that one person could just get rid of all of that without anyone seeing anything, noticing anything.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, there not CCTV, no cameras or anything that picked up? That's so frustrating.
They couldn't find. It is frustrating. So over the years, because their months of searching turned into years of searching. And over the years, Danielle's family continued to keep her top of mind. They made every effort to chase down any tips that came their way, no matter how silly that it may seemed at the time. They felt like until there was evidence to suggest that she was dead, they had to believe she was alive somewhere, which I can't blame them, really.
Right.
I can't even imagine.
No.
They even got a number of calls from psychics, one of which called John and told him that Danielle was being held in a boxcar in Philadelphia. So John hops in his car. He calls the police on the way there.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, the police were like, this is nonsense, but we're going to meet you there just in case.
Oh, man.
You know, basically for your safety. they didn't believe she was there, but they found nothing. And, you know, we've talked about this before. When you're desperate, you are, you know, the police can't help you.
Yeah.
You found nothing. And a psychic calls you to tell you they know where your sister is. I mean, you're going to get in the car and go.
You're going to take every tip and trick.
What's the harm?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Richard's family, however, they felt like their son was dead pretty much early on. His mother said she just felt it just really early on that she was never going to see him again. Mm-hmm. And over time, the two different perspectives took a toll on these families' relationships. You know, they were really leaning on each other for a while. They both knew what the other was going through, you know? Yeah. They were really all each other had. Danielle's family also started to think maybe Richard had something to do with this.
No.
Maybe he was into something. I mean, you start grasping at straws at this point. Like, you can't think of anything. Like, maybe he was tangled up in something and he got them killed.
Oh, man.
And his family really resented that.
Oh, I'm sure.
And then, of course, his family was like, well, maybe it was Danielle. Maybe it was her ex-husband. Uh-huh. Maybe she was into something and, you know, she was in a nasty divorce and maybe he did something to them. And after all, Joe Imbo up and moved to North Carolina shortly after Danielle's disappearance.
He didn't want to have anything to do with it.
That didn't look very good. So these families kind of fell apart. And in 2008, the FBI released a statement to the public kind of alluding to a potential murder for hire plot and that the couple and the truck wouldn't just vanish without a trace, without some serious forethought and careful planning, you know, because the odds of a random attack making two people and a truck disappear without anyone seeing something seems really far-fetched. I mean, they parked close. They didn't have a far walk from the door to the car. It was a Saturday night. I mean, you're talking 11:30 p.m. The party's just now getting started for some people. You know, people are just arriving out at 11:30, you know?
Yeah. And if someone was sitting in the back of the truck waiting for them, like, somebody would have seen that person get in the truck if it was that close. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like an amateur could just abduct two people and no one see anything.
Yeah.
Also, I think it's far easier to steal a truck that only has one person in it. You know, like if you're going to steal a truck and you see that there's a couple going to the truck, maybe you steal a different truck. You know, like it just seems like it'd be harder to take down two people.
But if Danielle is 85 pounds and that's tiny, she's not going to pose a threat.
Yeah, good point. Now, FBI agent Rossetti says he has a suspect pool. He said he does have some motives and theories, but he has no physical evidence to tie any of those people to their disappearance. He's only really been open about this, like, murder-for-hire plot, which it surprises me, I guess, that that would be his theory.
So has he called out Joe being the one who hired?
No, he hasn't, like, named anyone, but he has said that Joe is not cleared. He has said that. So Joe remains a person of interest. In 2010, there was an inmate in Philadelphia who hung himself with a shoelace when he was in prison. And there was a rumor that he left a suicide note saying that he was responsible for the deaths of Richard and Danielle. But these turned out to be just rumors. There was a suicide note. It just didn't contain any information about the couple.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
This inmate, whose name was Robert Carey, ran a very successful prescription pill ring. And he made a lot of money doing so. And his acquaintances said he didn't need or really want to kill anyone. And any disputes he really had with people were more of like punching, like minor physical altercations. They didn't see him like being a murderer. Gotcha. Now, still the FBI has not ruled him out as being involved either, even though that suicide note did not indicate that he was involved in it. But they just think, well, maybe somehow he could be involved.
Right.
Grasping at straws. There must be something else that they're trying to piece together with that. I did read something about a videotaped interview that was played at a trial of someone involved in this prescription drug ring.
Oh, okay.
And the person in the interview was being asked about a double homicide. And so I think that's where they're trying to make a connection.
Okay.
Still, there's a little bit of confusion as to the relevancy of that interview as it pertained to the trial, because it was entered in as evidence, it was played at the trial, and it was very confusing for everybody at the trial. Like, what does this have to do with anything? So they're thinking, oh, double homicide, maybe that's it. They also looked into a convicted murderer. His name was Anthony Rodesky. He was this big burly character with a swastika tattooed on his head.
Oh my gosh.
He had actually murdered two men in two separate robberies, and I couldn't find what specific information they learned from either of those things that would have them believe that he would be involved in Danielle and Richard's disappearance, but they did look at him. They searched his home. They dug up his basement, his septic tank, but it all amounted to nothing in this case. I think after so many years, they're really digging deep and getting down and dirty and going really to the darkest parts of society to try and make any connection they could.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, but at least they're still trying, because so many times there's detectives or police that, they just kind of give up.
They just throw up their hands and say, look, we've got nothing to go on. But you're right. They're rolling up their sleeves and they're doing the dirty work. Now, interestingly, Joe Imbo did an interview with a reporter for Philadelphia Magazine. And weirdly enough, they met at a cafe in Folly Beach, South Carolina, which is near my neck of the woods. So at least in 2014, when this interview was done, we know he lived in South Carolina. So he moved again. And I'll post a link to this interview in the show notes. After reading the interview, it kind of made me feel bad for the guy.
Yeah.
Just seeing his perspective about things. You know, he said he had a lot of regrets about the past. He regrets, you know, asking Danielle to quit her music. He says, like, having space from that, he realized just how much that meant to her. Mm. And he regrets how their marriage fell apart. He regrets cheating on her.
Yeah.
And treating her the way he did. He said he's really bitter. He's bitter about how his life turned out and how, I think he kind of feels guilty. Like, maybe if they hadn't split up, he could have done more to protect her.
Right,
exactly. You know, he adamantly denied having any knowledge whatsoever about Danielle and Richard's disappearance. And he even said that he's really frustrated with the investigation. He's like, I can't believe they haven't solved this by now. Yeah. I can't believe they haven't found anything. And that seems like a weird thing to say if you were guilty.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's just really good, but... He also said that his biggest fear is that his son will somehow resent him someday when he's, like, old enough to understand what's happened here. You know, he feels like people view him as a monster, and I think that's why he's moving around. And, you know, once his son gets older and hears all these rumors about his dad and what did his dad have involvement, I think he's worried that it might affect his relationship with him. So if you're interested in reading that interview, it was interesting to me. It seems like he really is sad about it, like the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it interesting that he did the interview.
Yeah.
9 years later.
After he moved away from the situation.
Yeah, twice.
Yeah.
Like after he moved twice. And to be honest, he's probably moved again because now people know, you know, from that interview, people know he lives in South Carolina. So he's probably moved by now. Now, as late as March of this year, 2022, there was a rescue group. What did I say? Rescue?
I was like, wait, what is that?
There was a rescue group based out of Oregon called Adventures with a Purpose. You may have heard of them. They've worked on a number of other cases. They confirmed this past March that they were going to take another look at Richard and Danielle's case.
Wow.
They specialize in water search and recovery. And since 2019, they've actually helped solve 26 missing persons cases because of their search efforts. They have found so many missing people, like their cars in the water.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. I just think
that sounds
what
like
they
an
do
amazing,
is so amazing.
Yeah. Like that sounds.
Yeah. They have like a YouTube channel and I'll link one of the searches in the show notes. But they had done two previous searches before for Danielle and Richard, and they wanted to check one more place. They had gotten a tip from one of their YouTube viewers about a broken gate on a boat ramp just 2 days after the couple went missing.
Hmm.
They went up and down the Delaware River underneath the Ben Franklin Bridge. They didn't find anything.
Hmm.
And AWP are very certain that the couple is not in that location.
Yeah.
Because they have sonar to see if there are any cars down there. And it's interesting to me because, like I said earlier, nothing has ever been found. If they were snatched, you know, she had a purse with her.
Yeah.
Why wasn't her purse ever found? No items of clothing have ever been found.
Mm-hmm.
No shoe, you know, like really interesting.
Yeah.
But these families really need answers.
Yes.
They're living one of the worst kinds of existence where you're just left to wonder.
Yeah.
I mean, they're left to lay awake at night, scrutinizing everything that was ever said or done, you know, trying to rack your brain to think of, you know, make some sense of this situation.
Right.
Richard's mother, Marge, said that they've lost a lot of friends because nobody wants to be around them anymore because they're just sad all the time. And she doesn't blame them. I mean, she says, we're just miserable people. Like, I wouldn't want to be around me either.
I'm sorry.
Danielle's family says they're bitter They live with this sick feeling every day of not knowing. And they live every day like that, and they wake up and it's the same thing just every day. Huge gaping hole in their life where she used to be. And I just cannot imagine. Both families admit they still drive slow sometimes looking for that black truck.
For sure, yeah.
Or any sign of them. I would too. I'd probably spend the rest of my life, you know, going out of my way to just...
Driving across America.
Yeah, I would. Probably. Yeah. Danielle's brother John said, you know what? At this point, I almost don't even care about justice. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to know what happened to her. Yeah. If no one ever pays for this, fine, but I just want to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's desperation.
Yeah.
I mean, that is desperation right there. We'll post photos of what Richard Patrone and Danielle Imbo looked like the last time they were seen. In this upcoming information I'm about to give you comes straight from the FBI's website. Richard Patrone was last seen wearing a gray Polo brand sweatshirt and blue jeans. He has a tattoo of the word Angela on his left arm and a tattoo of clowns on his right arm.
Ooh.
Which, okay, Rich, you do you. Danielle has a tattoo of flowers on her lower back and was last seen wearing a dark colored jacket, cream colored sweater, and blue jeans.
Okay.
She wears three small silver rings on either her left or right middle finger. And she was carrying, like I said, a black purse, two-handled black purse at the time of her disappearance. So if you have any information regarding the whereabouts of Richard, Danielle, or Richard's truck, that could also be really important. You're encouraged to call the Citizens Crime Commission. They're also offering a $50,000 reward for any information that leads to finding the pair. You can call them at 215-546-TIPS. That's 215-546-8477. You can also call the South Philadelphia Police Department at 215-686-3013. Or Mount Laurel Township Police at 856-234-1414. And I'll include all of these numbers in the show notes and on Instagram. And I'll also include more information about Adventures with a Purpose because I think what they do is so amazing.
Yes.
You can donate to their cause. You can send them
cases. I want to go work with them.
Yeah, I know. It's really cool what they do. What a mystery.
Yeah, it sounds like the perfect crime.
Right.
But someone out there has information, and I hope and pray that one day you will come forward. And my biggest thing about this is that I pray that I'm going to be praying for the families because I pray that they can find peace and comfort and hope to live life to the fullest, even in this tragedy. That's, my heart goes out to them.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I could put myself in their shoes, I know where I feel like I know what survivor's guilt feels a lot like when you feel like you're leaving something behind or you're leaving someone behind and to not know what happened to her. I think you feel like you can't really move on. Like,
right.
I just can't imagine. So it's really, really sad. Do you have any kind of idea or theory? What do you think happened?
Well, I mean, really my only theory that I'm thinking in my mind is that it was a robbery. I mean, like I said before, somebody laying in wait in the back of the truck, but why would someone get in the back of the truck that close to the bar they were at?
Yeah.
I mean, they could have taken the truck, dumped their bodies somewhere, and just driven to a whole new state and changed the way the truck looked. I don't know. I mean, yeah, with the whole murder for hire thing, it seems plausible that, you know, Joe had their son that night. So he could have been like, well, I had him. We were at the birthday party. I had nothing to do with it. So maybe he could have hired someone to do it just to kind of, it was the perfect time for him to say, you know, I was taking care of my son. I wouldn't have had anything to do with it. But I'm not accusing.
But also, like, where's the paper trail, if that's the case?
Yeah.
Like, where, how did he pay the person? I mean, I feel like there would have been a huge withdrawal or a check or, you know, some kind of... I think that's pretty, I don't know, because I did think of that too. Like, well, maybe he did hire somebody, but, and you're right when you said maybe somebody was laying in the back of the truck and maybe they even waited until they'd driven off completely.
Yeah.
And then popped out and said, like, keep driving or whatever. Right. But to your point, why would they steal a truck that was parked so close to the front?
Yeah.
And in such a public, like, the streets are packed with people.
But you know what?
Walking up and down.
Bad guys do the dumbest things anyways. So
you're right.
It sounds like just a burglary, kind of auto theft to me, but yeah, perfect crime. I mean, I don't know. That's wild. I've heard of another case like this where three people went missing and disappeared out of the blue. And I've thought
about... Was it the three women?
Yes. I've thought about doing a case on that, but it's so frustrating to not have that.
It is.
But it's also important to talk about it so that we know what to be looking for or if there's somebody out there that can shine some light.
I can't believe there's no CCTV footage about, like, you would think that there would have been on that street or across the street.
In 2005, or, I mean, that,
right,
it, what, the next almost street 18 over? Years ago.
Maybe a gas station they would have passed.
Right.
Like, anything.
Right.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Like, someone just, like, slip a note, I don't know, slip a note under the door of a library and just tell us what happened. Like,
or,
if you want to remain anonymous, just...
Yeah.
Just...
There's ways to do
tell
that.
Tell us what happened, please.
Yeah.
Tell this family what happened. They need to know. I need to know.
Yeah.
It's just so sad to me that this could just happen. Like,
it is.
A couple could just go missing. No trace.
No.
No trace. No, no tossed handbag out the, you know, window on the way. No, five states over, they find her ID. Like, none of that. Just no trace. It's baffling to me.
Yeah, very.
So, anyway.
Well, thanks for shining light on that. And hopefully someone will call one of those numbers.
Yeah, call one of those numbers if you know anything. But this was not that great.
No.
So let's not do this again sometime.
We'll do another thing another time.
we'll do another thing another time. See you next week.
Bye, y'all. Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast.